Bill D-47, Judicial Circuit. Hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention, as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument, Krawczyk versus Republic Title. Gentlemen.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Christine Cole. I'm with the Department of Justice, and I represent the United States. This court held last year in the Echeverria case that that in order to have a violation of Section 8B of the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, two parties must split the unearned portion of a settlement charge. However, at the same time, this court expressed or indicated some ambiguity in Section 8B. It also noted the, quote, broad power, close quote, that had been delegated to the Department of Housing and Urban Development by Congress, specifically in Section 2617 of the statute, which gives the agency the authority to issue both rules and regulations and to make interpretations that are necessary to carry out the purposes, the consumer protection purposes of RESPA. The court also noted that, stated that HUD, which had not been a participant in Echeverria or any of the other cases in this circuit or elsewhere that involved the interpretation of Section 8B, if HUD were to make a, quote, formal commitment to an opposing position, then this court could consider overruling its prior precedent. HUD responded promptly to that invitation, and a few months later issued the policy statement that is at issue in this case now before the court. In that policy statement issued last October, HUD explained unequivocally its longstanding interpretation of Section 8B, that while it does reach the typical split of an unearned fee between two parties, it's not limited exclusively to that. And that's precisely what this court said earlier in Bank in the Gannon case some 20 years ago. In fact, the plain text of the statute does reach the situation that we have in this case, where there is a markup of a settlement service provided by a third party, and the in this case the title company pocketed the additional excess.
What concretely in the language of the statute makes profit a crime?
There's nothing that either in the statute itself or in HUD's interpretation that makes profit a crime.
Well, as you've described it, and indeed as I read HUD's policy statement, the real estate settling agent cannot charge more for something than it pays. And that's essential to profit. It's not enough. It may have costs greater than the difference. But on your view, profit seems to be excluded by the statute.
That's incorrect, Your Honor. Profit is certainly, we indeed expect any party in the free enterprise system to make a profit. It's the question of where that profit is disclosed to the consumer. At its core, this is a consumer protection statute.
Really, and one, if you pay 4% to borrow money and you relend it at 6%, you don't tell anybody that you paid 4% for it.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, there is, again, disclosure is a critical part of RESPA, and there are various provisions. The HUD 1 settlement form, which you're familiar with, has line items.
That's why it's so puzzling that, in your view, one can't make a $15 markup on this service, but it's okay to make a $100,000 markup on the underlying loan or the underlying transaction.
You tell the consumer when the consumer's shopping around for mortgage money that you're charging an origination fee of, in your hypothetical, $100,000 to originate or process the loan application, and then the consumer is free to shop elsewhere.
But of course, the defendant is disclosing the fee charged for this service. So why doesn't that permit the other lenders to compete by saying that they're, you know, charging a lower
charge
fee?
Less.
Well, the deceptive quality of this is that often the lender will say we have very low or no origination fees, and then they build in their profits or
No, no, I can understand fraud, but you're not arguing that.
No,
you're not arguing that they're lying. You're arguing that they have repriced one of their inputs. You know, it's like a law firm charges a client for Xeroxing or something like that, and it's law firms can compete by saying, you know, we don't charge for Xerox, you know, we charge less than other firms. So it's unclear where this is not a kickback, which of course one of the, I guess, major focus of the statute. It's not a kickback. And where is the deception?
Well, the problem is that in Section 8B it specifically prohibits
we're talking now about, you know, making sense out of this rather than parsing the words of the statute. So you, HUD, you've taken an aggressive interpretation and embodied it in this, you know, sort of sub-Chevron form, this policy statement. So now the question is there some serious abuse that justifies what you're doing?
There is, and HUD has investigated numerous complaints about this all over the country when you multiply it case after case, charge after charge.
Mr. Edelman complains about everything, but that doesn't mean that there's a legal right? What is the, I join my colleague's question, what is the abuse one is getting at, as opposed to just, are people complaining?
The abuse is that people aren't being given the information that the HUD-1 form that says the actual charges paid for the service, that's supposed to be disclosed to them. And Section 8B specifically says that a person can't accept any portion split.
There are two possible arguments that you might be making. I read your brief to be saying you cannot collect more from the consumer than the government charges you for filing the deeds. There's a second argument, which is you have to reveal exactly what the government charged you, and then you can charge the consumer as much as the traffic will bear. Which of these arguments is it that HUD believes is correct?
Well, they're making both arguments because, again, this is at bottom a disclosure statute, and the key is that you tell the consumer what did it cost for that credit report.
So if HUD is making both arguments, then I understand your position to be that even if you truthfully reveal on the form, the government charges us $66 to file these documents, it is unlawful then to say, and to cover our own costs, we charge you $75.
You disclose it in a different place. The HUD-1 form is very specific as to where these different line items are revealed to the consumer. And at bottom, I don't want to cut into Mr. Edelman's time, but this is a statute, and I believe Echeverria it can be read to say that it's not, it doesn't admit to one reading.
In answer to Judge Easterbrook's question, how would that appear on the form?
I think it's lines between 801 and 804 is where the lender or title company, whoever, indicates its cost of doing business, and that's where it builds in its profit. We have never said that a title company or a lender is not entitled to make a profit. It's a question of where and how it's disclosed. And we have a situation here and in numerous cases throughout the country where these
the
costs of
credit
reports.
The consumer would be charged the same. It's just that the $15 in Judge Easterbrook's example would not be revealed. It would just be buried in the bottom line.
But that's at the heart of most consumer protection statutes, is you let the consumer know what's being done to him.
The heart of most consumer protection statutes is burying your costs someplace else and hiding them?
No, the heart of it is protecting the heart of it is protecting the consumer from that sort of abusive behavior.
Where's the protection in moving a particular cost from line 801 to line 804 if nothing whatsoever changes?
If you're an informed consumer, then you can make a judgment based on that information. That's what it's all about. That's what most consumer protection statutes are directed to.
I have one more question for you. What do you do if you're a lender in a circumstance where it's not clear exactly how much the government is going to charge for recording the deed?
Well, I think it would be hard to imagine a situation where, I mean, recording fees by government agencies, the local governments, are fairly standard, so I think it would be difficult.
Actually, the fees suggested in this case suggest that there's some considerable variance.
Well, the issue
but
here...
In any event, would you answer my question? What does the lender do in the case where it is unclear exactly how much the government will charge for recording the documents?
Well, it has to become clear at some point at the time that the settlement
is after the transaction
is
when they send
effected.
The documents in.
The question here is whether or not there's a claim that can survive a motion to dismiss. If a lender or title
Look,
company
if you don't
has
have an answer to my question, that's fine. But if there is an answer to my question, I would appreciate hearing it.
I believe I've answered it to the best of my ability. And I think I've eaten into Mr. Edelman's time.
Okay, thank you,
Ms.
Cole. Mr. Edelman?
Your Honors, let me very briefly answer the two questions posed by Judge Easterbrook. Republic is engaging in unfair competition. It quotes, and it quotes at the outset of the transaction before it's hired, a fee of 1101, the settlement or closing fee, in this case $315. Somebody can look at that, compare it with the price quoted by a competing title company, and decide which to use. In fact,
But why would a consumer do that? Why isn't the consumer interested in the bottom line, what his total charge is? Because according to Ms. Cole, you could take out the piece of the 315 that represents, say, the markup, and put it somewhere else so that the total amount being charged the consumer is the same. And why would the consumer be going item by item? Why wouldn't he be interested in how much this credit is going to cost him compared to what he can get from someone else?
Because you first contract with a lender, and here you or the consumer or the consumer's attorney is contracting with a title company. He has a choice of multiple title companies, and Republic quotes one price and actually gets a higher.
No, wait,
price.
You're talking about a situation where the consumer is. Represented by counsel?
In most or many of these cases.
But surely these real estate lawyers know what the government's fees are.
The real estate lawyer may know.
Obviously they know. It's their business. They know what these.
The title
fees
company
are.
Certainly knows. And
so where's the potential deception?
The deception is that Republic Title quotes $315.
I know, but you're saying this person's represented by a lawyer. Lawyer looks at the lines. Lawyer knows that the filing fee isn't $315. So who's being deceived?
The price Republic quotes for its service is $315 plus governmental charges. It's actually represented to be the government recording and transfer charges. You show up at the closing. You find out that in effect Republic has increased its price. Instead of charging $315, it charges $315
and now I'm totally unclear why you're relying on this part of RESPA. If your claim is one that the company says $315 plus actual costs, that's a claim of actual fraud, not a claim of splitting commissions with somebody else. Why are you using this section of RESPA?
Because I think this section of RESPA was intended to cover this practice. The title company acts as agent for every party to the transaction. As in Gammon, in the Gannon case, it is acting in multiple capacities when it does this. And it does it to engage in unfair competition in a manner that directly implicates the purpose of RESPA, namely to foster competition among providers of settlement services. The representation made regarding the government transfer fees, and it's absolutely clear from the instructions that go along with this form, is that the amount quoted is supposed to be the actual amount dispersed to the government.
But you're saying the lawyer for the borrower knows this is not true.
When he shows up at the closing.
Mark, yeah. So what's
at
the
that
problem?
Point in time, what is he going to do?
Well, if he's concerned about it, he can say, look, this charging X dollars for something which only costs X minus Y, and I don't want to pay it. My client doesn't want to pay it.
In most cases, the title company insists on the payment, and you don't have a choice. You've got $200,000.
Well, in the market, you don't have insistence on payment. You take your business elsewhere.
That's not a feasible alternative when you have a contract to purchase a house or refinance a house. You have you would incur substantial liability for not going through with the purchase transaction, far in excess of the small amount that the overcharge represents. That's what enables Republic to get away with this.
But now you're saying there's no you're saying contrary to Ms. Cole, there's no competition in this business.
There is
you're stuck. You show up at the closing, the title company screws you, there's nothing you can do.
At the closing, there's nothing you can do. The competition is supposed to take place earlier when you're comparing their 315 quote to the quotes of other title companies. But their 315 quote is false. It's 315 plus some increment, which they don't tell you until the last minute.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chait?
See if you can talk the panel out of your side now. I say, see if you can talk the panel out of ruling for you. Go ahead.
I hope not to do that.
Then you can't take a hint, but go ahead.
It's always a challenge. A surprising number of lawyers prove up to it.
May it please the court, my name is Leland Chait. I'm representing the Republic Title Company. The panel has put its finger on what really is the problem with this case, is that there's really no...
Can you speak a little louder, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, there's really no deception. There's no lack of disclosure here. And what, at bottom, what the government and plaintiffs are trying to do is enact a broad price control statute that was, or turn RESPA into a broad price control statute, which was a purpose that was expressly rejected by Congress when it adopted RESPA. As this court noted in Mercado, and as is plainly set out in the Senate Banking Report, Banking Committee report by which this legislation was submitted to Congress, at that time Congress had before it two alternative bills. It had RESPA, and it had a price control, and it had a statute that would have called for federal prices to be imposed upon settlement service providers. Congress rejected the broad price controls, and instead chose RESPA, which was aimed at governing or applying to the behaviors or certain business practices that affected prices. The policy statement that the government is pointing to would, in essence, reactivate the broad price controls that the Congress rejected. It not only calls for the kind of markup issues that they brought forth here, but it says that that anything that HUD would deem to be unreasonable as far as the charge goes would be unlawful, and that is nothing more than trying to arrogate for HUD to arrogate to itself the power to set these prices. That was clearly rejected by Congress, and it's improper for HUD to try to re-legislate for Congress. The only other point I will make, if there are no other questions from the court, is that it is not known at the time of closing how much these recording charges are. In Illinois, by Illinois statute, recording charges vary according to a whole host of criteria, such as the number of pages in the document to be recorded, the size of the margins, whether the documents have marginalia or whether they don't, whether there are certain...
In spite of all that, you add money to it, though. You charge more than they charge you. So what difference does that make?
Well, Your Honor, my only point is that at the time that...
You mean like what you're saying is Republic has a right to gouge people that buy their product. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that often...
Well, I thought I'd help you in your program, but so go ahead.
No, Your Honor. My only point was at the time that these...
My point is that all the things you have told us, we already know. Is there anything we don't know?
No, Your Honor.
That's good.
You know, you could avoid this problem just by saying we charge $100 because it can't possibly exceed that, and we'll send you a check for the difference when we find out how much they actually charge us.
That is correct.
Why don't you do that, then?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there is...
Why? Well, just why not? Why can't you do that?
Well, we could, or it could be done.
But you wouldn't make as much money.
No, it would increase, it would likely increase the cost of consumers altogether.
Why?
Because to do that...
You give them back the money, excess money, that you have collected from them that you have not paid out. Now, what's wrong with that?
Title agents process tens of thousands of transactions a month, and to do the kind of checking you're suggesting
requires... Well, that doesn't take any time at all. It takes a little. All you got to do is add and subtract and send a check.
Now,
what's the big deal?
Well, the big deal is that you would have to that the title company would
The big deal is you wouldn't make as much money. That's the big deal.
Now, Your Honor, what I'm trying to suggest is that it would increase the cost to consumers.
How do you know you've never tried it? Well, how would it increase the cost to consumers? The price of a stamp or the price of writing the check?
The price of investigating what the actual cost was.
Add and subtract. You send out a bill. You subtract how much have you paid, and that's the end of that.
It's not the actual...
You have to call two lawyers to do that or an accountant?
It may take a lot of different personnel.
You're doing very well. You're working at the point I ask you to start on. So go ahead.
The only other point I wanted to make was that at the time of the closing, these charges can't be known. And in many instances, they can be estimated. And the fact that the process of estimating... can be an efficient way to handle these kinds of transactions when there's the bulk that there is.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chates.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And thank you to Ms. Cole and Ms. Gentleman.